Order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Council President Cardoza.
Here.
Councilmember Jones.
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
Here. No invocation tonight. If you join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item would be to consideration to amend the agenda, please.
Mayor, I move to amend the agenda to add item 7E under business. Request from Mayor Sear to confirm appointment of Paul Stevens, P.E., to the position of Kansas City Engineer. And then to add executive session to discuss personnel pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Consent agenda. Are there any items we want to pull for discussion or minor questions or anything like that?
Mayor, I have one on D3.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to pull it or just discuss it.
How much discussion? Just have a question?
I have a question on the schematic that's on there on page 9 of 10 for 4D3. It shows the, if I looked at it correctly, it shows it going all the way to Strobel Road. Should that be Sailor or Strobel, or am I reading that schematic wrong? It does go to Strobel, the right-of-way. Okay. Okay. That's the only question I had. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Chris, would you poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
That motion carries. We will start then with item 7A, update on downtown revitalization project funding. Chris Ingalls and Bob Bachman.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. As we discussed at the last meeting when we reviewed this, that we anticipated that there would be some potential additional funding coming. And that part of that funding did come, and we are still pursuing other funding, but we received an additional $75,981 in federal funding. So that, in the upper area, I break down the costs of what you guys approved at 30%, which was the reduced shortage for the additional items if you chose to do it. And so what we would ask with this additional funding is for council's consideration and direction on whether you'd like to combine the funding with the city funding that you committed along with the TMA TAP funds that we received of $75,981 and cover the cost of putting in power underground, and that would indicate a reserve of $10,081 to return to city funds, or the option to use the federal funds to cover the cost of putting the power underground, installation of a pathway, though we had discussed that at length, and continue to use council allocation for the bulb outs with a reserve of $481 to return to city funds. And I've broke out the math calculation. Hopefully it makes sense. The match of $6,019, which would be covered with this additional $75,000, $981 is covered with the city's commitment already. And I stand for any questions.
Okay.
I have one question. Are we still attempting to get Idaho Power to pay for the power?
Where?
Power was going to pay $11,000 for the moving of it. In reading the agreement, I felt they would be obligated to move the pole but not put it underground, so they agreed to pay that portion of it.
Okay.
Okay, further questions?
I should have comments, yeah.
Mayor, the only thing that I'm still a little hung up on is that from what I recall from the last discussion is that this pole is being moved. With the city's staff's recommendation of being a safety issue, but I'm not getting that concurrence from anything else that we've heard from the engineer nor the police department. So I'm just having a hard time allocating funding to do something that I'm really not convinced it's a true safety issue.
Since our last discussion, there was a little more research done into that. That power pole was recently replaced because it had been run into several times, mostly just scraping the edge off of the post, so it was getting thinner. I can't tell you exactly when that was replaced. Bob might know, but since it's been replaced, they've scraped on it about three or four more times. So I guess the concern from our point of view, now that we've really looked at it, is that to move the pole is actually going to move it closer to the Super C building and a little bit more in that lane and make it possible for it to be hit even more frequently than it is now. So that's kind of where that's coming from, and it looks like it's going to impede the ability of the business there to continue to do business the way they are. So that's why we consider it a safety issue, although no one's hit it hard enough to knock the thing over. But
I guess I'm a little puzzled as why, if it's a safety issue, I would think that it's in an improper place, that even with our agreement that Idaho Power would not pay for it, since it's a safety hazard for putting a pole in a place that was known to be possible intention of getting hit. So,
Council Member Jones, your point's well taken, but they'll only pay to move the pole. They don't want to establish precedent of putting lines underground. And I'm not sure where they can move that to with stringing distance.
Yeah, and I agree with the mayor that I think moving it is not going to solve any issues. I think it may make it worse. I guess at this point, being that this is going to be paid with grant money and not funds collected from tax revenue, I probably wouldn't have a problem putting the pole in. I still am probably disagree on the path at this point. So my suggestion, my preference would be to do the option number one, if that's the consensus of the other council members.
Okay.
I agree. I am still not convinced that the path would be used because I don't see that it takes you anywhere that's safer to cross the street from what I remember seeing last time. I agree. I would like to go with number one.
Okay. Anything further?
Do you have any concerns, Richard?
No.
Then, Mayor, I move that we adopt or go with option number one to allow additional federal funds to cover the cost of putting the power underground and hold off on putting the sidewalk in or the pathway in, as suggested.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve for option number one, as it's stated in the packet, to put the power underground and the bulb out, and that's it. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you for your time again.
Discussion on City Hall parking lot use by groups under special event plans. Richard Rhodes.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. As you know, we've got a wonderful parking lot out here. We've had some inquiries as to the availability of it for groups to rent on the weekends, particularly. So I thought as we're rewriting the special event plan, perhaps an opportunity with Council to discuss your thoughts. Number one, should we rent it out to groups, like crafters, perhaps at one point in time moving the farmers market down here and incorporating it with the green belt and maybe some music on the weekends and that type of thing. So just generally your thoughts, if we should move forward with trying to implement that into a special event so that we can move forward.
I just want to clarify. So you're talking about actually using the parking lot as an event space versus using it for parking for an event to be held somewhere.
Correct.
Okay.
And actually I had one request today about Stubbs usually uses that for fireworks in that far corner. And so what his suggestion was that he would give us a percentage of sales. I think he said last year the sales was around $5,000, so he'd be willing to give 10% of that. That really wouldn't be a problem where it's at over there off into the side corner, and there's usually not more than three or four cars that pull in there at any one time. And for me, I'd like to just kind of bring some more stuff to this end of town, so that's kind of where I'm coming from on it, is I'd like to be able to let people use that parking lot on the weekend and provide special events. However, we can do that with fees for percentages of sales, or if they have, you know, however they do that, maybe they sell spaces in there or something, and then we get a percentage of the spaces they use, or whatever the case may be, but or maybe even a flat fee rate.
I think I would have no problem with the allocation of the parking lot for the public use, since it is a public building and they do basically own the property. The only thing I would like to see in the contract would be a hold harmless endorsement to protect the city. But as far as charging, I don't know if I would be agreeable to even a charge, Mayor.
What damage
could they do to a parking lot?
Yeah, we were kind of thinking along the lines of like use of city parks and that type of thing, where they pay a little bit of a fee to use the gazebo, $35 or whatever the case is. I don't remember exactly what the fee is, but that kind of a thing.
It's basically, I would liken it to maybe paying for exclusive use. I mean, to the extent that if somebody reserved it and to hold a special event or something, people wouldn't be able to go in and park there like they normally would. So we would be excluding the general public depending on what their use is, that kind of thing. So, I agree, like the same as we would do for a park or that sort of thing. I think the one difference being, well, for any type of sales or event type thing, we would require something more official, but otherwise it would be like a first come first served, like you can kind of just take your chances with the park. But I don't think that would be a good idea to do with the parking lot, where like just anybody could come set up a table and start selling stuff. Like I think that could get hairy pretty fast.
It's a city parking lot, they own it indirectly. I don't know why we would be charged now on a park. I could understand the cost of having to maintain the yard or the lawn, the trees, but in a parking lot, there's nothing that can be destroyed. I don't know. It just seems like every time I turn around, we've got another fee for something for the taxpayers.
Well, I guess the way I would look at it is people can use the park for park stuff, and there's no charge for that. I mean, if you want to go play in the park, you can go play in the park. If you want to use the park for your own personal barbecue to the exclusion of the public, then there's a different way of going about doing that. So if you want to park in our parking lot because it's a parking lot, you can do that anytime you want. But if you want to keep other people from being able to park in the parking lot because you want to host a craft fair or sell fireworks in a part of it or something like that, then, you know, there's some additional cost because you're excluding everybody else who has the equal right to be there. That's the way I look at it. But if you want to just use it like everybody else is entitled to use it as a parking lot, then no, of course you get to do that for free.
Patrick,
you ready?
Go ahead. We've got all night.
I have no issue with an event wanting to use a parking lot. I think it should be on a reserve basis and treated as anything else that requires a kind of like a special event plan. I mean, obviously, if somebody wants to have a craft fair here, they should have to come down and reserve it, whatever the fee is. If there's a fee, that can, we can figure that out in the future. I do feel that I personally think, though, that if any event comes here that has any type of sales, collection of fees, or anything like that, is required to have a special event plan and to provide their own insurance, as we would require anybody else to do. I just want to make sure we're clear that because they're using our parking lot, they're not under our policy, unless the city decides to partner with an event like we've done in the past with, like, the trunk or treat, stuff like that. Obviously, that's would be something I want to discuss. We can do that during the special event if need be. So I really don't necessarily have an issue with it. I'm concerned that there's no public restrooms around. I think that would be something that I would be concerned about an all-day event, not having any requirements for porta-potties or something like that. I'm against using the facilities in the building here for something like that, unless it's a city event that we have the building open for public use that day, obviously. But parking lot issues, I mean, I think I think there would be a need for that type of thing. So I think we may have to add some sort of requirement of when we would require a porta potty or something like that.
Councilmember Jones, we do have that in the special event plan to provide for porta potties for sanitary facilities. So we even sometimes require them on a special event plan because it's too large a crowd at where there are bathrooms. So
yeah,
so that is also in the special event plan as it stands now and would continue to be so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it something that, I mean, obviously I think we'd have some consideration as far as if we're going to have events in the evening where there's lighting issues. I know that I feel there's probably a little limited lighting out there for something like that, and that could be something else that we discuss later. So, I mean, I really don't have a problem with it. I think we should treat it like we would something else. So, I mean, there's little stuff that we can figure out, but I think if the other council members are willing to allow a little leeway as far as the special event committee figuring that out. And obviously that would be brought back to council for approval anyways, so you'd have a chance to read all that. The only question I would have is, I would assume our fleet director has no concerns, being that he's probably responsible for the care of this parking lot.
No, I don't have any concerns.
So I don't see why we couldn't. I have no problem moving forward. The other council members are all right with that.
Okay.
Discussion.
I think I'm fine with it. The one thing that popped into my head when you mentioned the fireworks was just if we want to think on the front end about any parameters for, like, how many different events or things can happen at once, particularly when it's something like a fireworks stand that's limited to a smaller portion. Like, would we allow that at the same time as, like, a shaved ice business? And how many businesses are we talking about? And just that kind of thing. If we want to try to think about that on the front end, in terms of coming up with, like, is it just one at a time? Is it more based on how much of the parking lot they use? That sort of thing, just so that I always appreciate more when we can come up with some sort of, like, objective framework on the front end, so it's easier to implement that on the back end rather than people feeling like maybe we're coming up with rules just because we're trying to accomplish a specific outcome. So just maybe toss that around a little bit, but I agree with everything you said.
And to add to that, I know that there's other cities that have had not necessarily issues with this type of thing, but as far as vendors and parks and stuff like that, they have lotteries that when they have multiple vendors come in, so that not one person has precedence over somebody else. So it seems, I mean, I would think from a city standpoint, we want to make sure that we don't show any partiality where an actual promoter could. So.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Item 7C, update on indigency applications. Richard Rhodes.
Thank you again, Council. For the record, Richard Rhodes. As we indicated when we adopted the resolution on the indigency, we would bring these to you monthly just to give you an update. We did have one completed application, 2017-02. This application was denied. The individual is purchasing a home here in CUNA, with the lender being IHA. Applicant has a significant other live-in who makes $34,000 a year. Applicant is unemployed, was terminated from employment back in September, and hasn't found work. Receiving food stamps, total monthly income for their household is just under $3,000. Significantly, in going through the bills, one of the applicant's bills was a cell phone bill with T-Mobile for $160 a month. Had some other assets, no documented employment searching. Really, applicant took a quick approach to try just to get the application. We felt like just to try to get the money without really making an effort. So for those reasons, we denied that application.
Do we have any sort of limits on how frequently somebody can apply after they've been denied, or assuming they put together the full packet, they could potentially do it every month or every 2 months or something?
We didn't put that in. The thought was that it was at one time, but we'll see how it plays out.
I'm just wondering if, like, in this case, if it sounds like it was maybe more of a rushed thing, and now that they maybe know, I don't know how much feedback we give in terms of why someone was denied, but if they choose to either supplement with additional information that would seem to qualify them, or if they, like, remove what we consider unnecessary bills and then still have a financial hardship, like if they could reapply in a month or two.
We certainly would consider it if they did that. The letter that went out to the applicant outlined the certain things.
Okay.
So if the applicant read it and realized, wow, I shouldn't be asking for city assistance when I'm carrying a $160 a month cell phone bill and I've got these other assets, then certainly they could get rid of those and come back in and say, here's what we have. So.
Okay.
Very good. Any further questions? Thank you, Richard. Item 7D, consideration to approve the charitable donation of real property in Ardell Estates, number 1, from DB Development, LLC. Richard Rhodes.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Again, for the record, Richard Rhodes. This last item is rather self-explanatory. Ardell Estates, there's a lot in there that's going to be donated to the city for the construction of an irrigation lagoon for expansion of the system. Mr. Timmack donated that by special warranty deed, and then as consideration in that donation, we're going to grant him the acknowledgement of that being a gift for the approximate value of $163,000 by a letter, and then the letter of appreciation for that. So I will stand for any questions.
Mayor, I just have one question. I'm assuming, Gordon, that this works into your plan for the city facilities in the future?
Councilman Jones, yeah, I'm probably to blame.
It's a good thing, though. I'll give you credit. Thank you.
Richard, I have a question on page 5 of 5. Certificate of Authority of Manager, number 3038, DMB Development. I appreciate the donation to the city. I question Tim X's signature. He's signing as manager of EAMI LLC, not as the authority of DB Development there. It's also on page 7 of 7. I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, but if he's signing under the capacity of a manager for EAMI as opposed to DMB Development, does he have the authority to do that?
EAMI is the parent LLC of the other LLCs. So he's a manager of EAMI, which is then a manager of all these DB Development LLCs. So because it specifically says in the first paragraph the managers of that, and then he's signing as the overall manager, he would have the authority as the EAMI manager, which is the parent LLC over the DB LLCs.
I guess my question is, for the legality, should there be a paragraph in there specifying that EAMI is the mother company of DMB Development LLC, since they're two separate LLCs? Is there continuity between them, or individual LLCs?
I can have him add the paragraph.
I mean, I appreciate what he's doing. I just want the legality to be in a form that we don't get bit into buttocks later. So. That was the only thing I had, Mayor, is okay. The whether or not EAMI had the legal authority to sign for a different LLC.
It is the parent LLC over the DB LLCs.
Are you going to add something for that, or are you going to?
I don't think it's necessary, but if Council Member Cardozo would like it.
You're the city attorney. If you feel comfortable with it, I do too. I just question how two different LLCs could have the same ownership for allocating a gift like that.
If you track back his LLCs, they all go to the EAMI LLC as the parent LLC.
But each LLC is a different entity, would it not be?
But EAMI, he's the manager of EAMI LLC, and then that will drop down as being the LLC for the others as you trace through that. So.
Okay.
The way that I look at it is it doesn't necessarily matter to me what is written under his signature block, so long as it mentions up top the undersigned constituting all the managers of DB Development LLC. So as long as all the managers of DB Development have signed it, I think we're good to go. So.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay. Okay, so on items 7D, A, B, and C are all concurrent to that same situation there. So the one, 14-2017 is the warranty deed, 15-2017 is the gift agreement, and 16-17 is the letter of appreciation for the charitable donation. Unless you want to have specific discussions on each one, we can just do concurrent motions. Unless there's further discussion?
No.
I'm good with all of
them. Each resolution needs to be brought up individually, don't they?
Yes, let's do that.
I'm fine with that.
I move we approve resolution number R14-2017.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution R14-2017 accepting the special warranty deed from DB Development LLC. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve resolution R15-2017.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution R15-2017 authorizing mayor to execute the DB Development LLC gift agreement. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve resolution R16-2017.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R16-2017 authorizing the mayor to execute a letter of appreciation for the charitable donation of real property from DB Development LLC. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item 7E. So this is a request from me to confirm the appointment of Paul Stevens, PE, to the position of CUNA City Engineer. What I did was I put together a committee made up of all the directors of the city, and we vetted through the applications that we received. At first, I was a little nervous that we didn't get very many, but we did get a few, and the more I looked at it and the more I learned, the more I realized that the economy is good and the engineers are busy and working and doing well. So we did end up with some very good applicants, though. Kind of came down to two people there in the end, and I think that we had a consensus on Paul Stevens as being the guy. He kind of seemed to be the one that had the most working knowledge into the areas in which Gordon now does with the city. He was a little lacking in knowledge on membrane systems for the wastewater treatment plant, but I don't think that we saw that as being a big problem. But it just kind of seemed like he was kind of the guy. So we're at a point now where we need to confirm an appointment. It'd be nice if we could just have him come in and do all this, but right now he's working in Oregon, so to have him be here is problematic. He does have a home in Payette that he travels to each weekend, but they have a lot of things going on at work, so he wasn't able to be here for a Tuesday night to introduce himself. So I guess with your permission, I would like to offer him the position and then negotiate with him. Doesn't mean that he's 100% going to take the job, but I can finish the negotiations at least that way, and then he can put in his 30-day notice, and we can get things rolling, and Gordon can get to training him, and we can move on from there. I don't know if any of you picked up an application or the resume.
Resume. It looks on page 3 or 4, down towards the bottom. He's got some experience in Oregon waste systems in Arlington, Oregon, it looked like there.
Yes, he does have experience in wastewater treatment. It's just not our type of mechanical
system.
Plant.
That's
what I meant by that. He does have experience in drilling wells and that type of thing, and I think Gordon was comfortable with his answers. And if you want to ask any of the staff any questions about their thoughts, you certainly are welcome to do so. I know it's hard to make a decision based on not meeting someone and being through the process, so certainly feel free to ask any of the directors any of their thoughts.
Well, I defer to the expertise of the folks who were involved in the selection process. So if he sounds like a good fit to you guys, I'm good with it.
And Mayor, that the decision was unanimous between all of them?
I believe that everyone was on board with it.
And there's no concern about meeting our policies of being hired? The only other question I have is that being that, I guess maybe for John, regarding the budget, we budgeted the full year being that we're looking at
7 months, the remaining money not used will be put back into contingency? Is that what happens to it? Or
you hear me okay? Okay, sorry, I thought it'd be a little bit more convenient to do it this way. For the record, John Marsh, Councilmember Jones, yeah, we did in the budget for both positions for a full year. As you know, we're moving into and closer to the middle of the year now, so which means we've got two things going on. We've got a savings from not hiring the person up to this date, but we also have we'll have a loss as we go forward. Is Gordon going to stay on a little bit longer to help train that person? So we should come in fairly close from a budget standpoint for that position this year. So it's not likely that we're going to have anything that would go back into contingency. It just kind of depends on how the negotiation process goes. But from a dollars and cents standpoint, we're fairly close to the budgeted line item this year.
I guess I'm a little confused on that. Richard, is that – I just want to make sure. I don't know if you understand where I'm going, and I just want to make sure that is something that can be openly discussed, or does that need to be
– Councilmember Jones, I think if, to answer your question, if there is any monies left over – from Gordon's departure and a late hire, that will go back into the contingency.
Okay. So that's, I mean, I would assume whatever between October 1st and now is going to go back, or whenever the hire date is going to go back into contingency. And I realize that possibly our current engineer may stay on past this fiscal year, because we haven't gotten that notice that we may need to take that money that was then and carry it over for the following year. I don't have a problem with that, but I'm figuring there's 4 to 5 months worth of money that we're not using.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I want. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And so we're also to the point here, too, where I don't think the overlap's going to be near that long. If you would like to.
Yeah, I just want to clarify
that you.
Yeah, that's not correct. I just want to make sure that's clear. As of right now, the way things are looking and the timing, it is not going to have much, especially not 4 months' worth, to go back into contingency. And that's why I said it depends on the negotiation process as far as where that salary comes in at. Where it was budgeted was one number. As the mayor had pointed out, the market is entirely different than it was when we budgeted. So those numbers will change, and like I said, it's not looking like at this point in time that there would be anything left over from that singularly budgeted item when all is taken into account at the end of the day.
Is just to maybe help clarify, is part of that because we only budgeted that Gordon was going to be here for a partial year versus full year, or is it due entirely to salary change for the prospective employee?
Both.
Okay.
Yes, both.
I think that's helpful because I think Pat was thinking we budgeted full year salary for two entire people. And so, you know, so we would realize the last couple of months savings because, anyway, knowing that we stopped budgeting for Gordon at a date certain, I think helps explain, right?
Well, that would explain, but I don't recall that being the case. I thought we budgeted for two people full year.
I know that we didn't discuss Gordon's salary specifically, just like we don't, because that. So whatever was included in the calculation was included in the calculation, and the only thing I remember us talking about was 1 year of salary for the other person. So I'm taking John's word for it that the budget did not include a full year of salary for Gordon.
It did, yes. Yeah. So just let me clarify. Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody's clear on how it pencils out. So the way we budget is we budgeted a full year for Gordon, and we budgeted a full year at a particular rate for the new hire, not knowing exactly how this is all going to pan out. The new hire was planned for at a, I'll call it a materially lower rate than what's actually panning out in the marketplace. So what's happened is that number's coming in, I'll just say materially higher than we planned. So we're losing some ground there. We're gaining some ground by the fact that the new hire didn't get hired on 10-1. It's the position's coming in later. We're going to save some by Gordon's early departure before the end of the fiscal year, but the longer this is drawn out, and it's been a tough process getting a person in here, the less that savings is by Gordon departing. So when you take those two into account, those three factors into account, it pencils out like we're going to be pretty close to what we budgeted overall. And I can certainly...
Well, that explains. Yeah, I think that the thing that I wasn't necessarily taking into consideration was the competitive rate.
Yeah,
that's the one that's... Okay, and that's if that's what's needed, then that's what's needed.
Yeah, that's the biggest portion of it right there.
Okay. That explains. That solved my concern.
Sure. And just to give you a little background, just to make sure for the record, the number we came up with was based upon the Idaho Department of Labor for the state of Idaho. That number turned out to be very, I don't want to call bogus, but very outdated, considering the marketplace today. So it was best we could work with.
Thank you.
Okay.
So does Gordon come back now and want a pay raise before he leaves or what?
Yeah.
Could I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, Gordon.
I'm going to take away your coat hanger. Mayor, I don't know whether you have, but you can certainly indicate to the council when my retirement date is.
Okay,
so
all right.
Aware of that. That's not, I don't consider that secret.
Okay. Like that. Yeah, so Gordon turned in a letter that was for the date of June 3rd for his retirement, so... The party will be, we haven't decided before or after that, but.
I want the coat hanger.
Put him a coat hanger on a plaque.
Could I ask Gordon, how do you feel about this gentleman?
They were two qualified people and capable. I felt like when we were through, that I felt like I could talk the language with him and explain what the duties and responsibilities are, as well as explain what the nuances of the city is for his assignments. So that was important to me, to be able to do that. Okay. If we were on two different planes, I would have been really concerned. But I felt like both of the final two candidates
we're qualified.
Yeah, okay. That'd be all right. He could learn it and understand it. And so I don't have any reservations about that.
And Gordon had a pretty extensive list of technical type questions that I think helped with his comfort level on how those things were answered. So we put a lot of weight into what Gordon said, obviously.
So you feel the transition should be smooth?
I do.
You're not going to give him a short-timer's attitude, are you? Okay. I have no problem with it, Mayor.
Okay.
I move we confirm the appointment of Paul Stevens, P.E., to the position of CUNA City Engineer.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to confirm the appointment of Paul Stevens, P.E., to the position of CUNA City Engineer. Chris, would you poll the council on this one?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you very much. So I think the only thing we have left is a request for an executive session to discuss personnel pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B.
Richard, I had a discussion item.
Okay, go ahead.
I just had a quick item. Richard? We talked two meetings ago about some information regarding a possible compensation for a council president. I don't know where we're at on that.
Councilmember Jones, my understanding at this point in time is the council president wasn't interested in that.
If you want to bring it up as an issue for future, that now would be a good time as any.
I mean, we can do it at budget time.
Okay.
If you're not concerned, I just.
Okay. Mayor, Are
yes.
we going to have the mayor council discussion?
I skipped over that. I apologize. Okay. Let's go ahead and do that now.
I'm kind of curious what's happening with the purchase of the Ada County Highway District shop over there on south of the tracks.
Short line there. I have not had that discussion yet with all the series of events that happened this last month. I never did get time to negotiate with that, and they didn't have time either, so I will be setting up a meeting next week to discuss that and a few other things. I think we're in really good with them right now, so
okay.
Now is probably a good time to talk about it.
I have a question, and I guess it should be addressed to Gordon. When Pat was talking about restroom facilities for our parking lot, we have the restrooms down where the horseshoe pit or the volleyball pit is. Do we have any portable restrooms at this end of the green belt during the summer? Or Bobby, maybe it should go to you.
For the record, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. Councilman Cardoza, we normally don't. But with moving the movies down here behind City Hall this summer, we are going to put a porta potty somewhere in the vicinity.
Okay. It might be a good time to bring it down here because of the green belt. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's all I had, Mayor.
Okay. Anything further?
I move we adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing a personnel matter.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to adjourn to executive session pursuant to Idaho Code 74-206B for the purpose of discussing personnel matter, and we will need Richard Roats, Bobby Withrow, and Bob Bachman. I think that's all we need for this discussion and council, of course. Motion's made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.